Hey, if you're listening to this episode of Talking Dad, make sure that you've listened to the entirety of season one, because we're recording this after we finished season one. This is not something we recorded right after we finished recording episodes 1 through 7.
Those ones start on episode 8.
Yes, the original Talking Dad started 8. We decided to go back after finishing season one for 1 through 7. So again, make sure we're going to spoil everything that happens in the entire podcast in these first 7 Talking Dads. So just be careful.
Be careful.
Exercise safe sex. Welcome, welcome, faithful listener, to Talking Dad, a podcast about the second time a dad reunited with his son in the Forgotten Realms. So this episode was about meeting Nick and
about? I thought it was, hey, everybody, this is Matt, and I'm here to say Will starts his rapping in a really good way.
Nice.
Oh, there was rapping. I forgot.
This is the beginning of Rock's Rock. It's the only thing that matters in this episode.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. The ultimate world build.
I don't even care about the rest of it.
You got to hear my hot bars for the first time.
Glenn, Nick, fuck it.
We were so young then.
What's the impromptu rap you do where you pick like one of the hardest words to rhyme?
It's bolder.
Bolder.
This was a mistake.
Igneous B.I.G.
Yeah, I came in with the Geology Rocks or something like that was the name of the his rap group or something. I can't remember from the dad fact.
This is really when Will's dad fact started to separate from our. Really took the lead with the dad fact.
I remember because I was like, I need a good dad fact. I got to do a good dad fact. And I remember thinking of it on the ride over, I think, being like, oh, it'd be funny if it was a rock. It originally was going to be a rock band and they were going to be like the Metamorphic Power Rangers or something like that.
That's
pretty
funny too.
And then I was like, no, rap is funny, or let him be this cringy rap dad, and I thought that was really good. And then I came up with those that Beth immediately calls out in a sentimental mood is not a rap song. It's what the fuck.
Well, that's also a good example of us teeing each other up. Anthony asks, could you give us a line from you? You mentioned you have a hip hop album, and then I come in with from the section where we talk about the Emancipation Proclamation in the context of geology.
I mentioned the Emancipation Proclamation because there's the slavery in the episode. And I'm like, we should do an Emancipation Proclamation. And then I talk about that on my rap album because I was like, this is hilarious. That was where I started being a bit more intentional, I think, with the dad facts. I think the sunrise one is the next episode or an episode or two. I think I do the whole glass of water first. I really kind of clicked into Henry's deal.
This is when you clicked in
here
and knew that Henry fucks.
Yeah.
This was the episode I get it now. You always need that third heat with a character. He's like, I get it. Henry fucks. And so you let us know the first hint of that was that he has a hip hop album called Rock's Rock.
That gag is so killer. It's bizarre to even think of it having a beginning.
It's a dad fact.
Yeah, it's a dad fact.
All important to have dad facts.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of the best stuff in the show comes from the dad facts. Yeah.
I wonder why that is.
Because the dad facts give us it's almost like a ritual at the beginning of the session for us to
transform.
To hone our comedic radars.
Well, yeah, but that's not an explanation for why they're so funny.
It's a free exposition is really what it is. Yeah. If you were to do that in the middle, it's always frustrating. So it's like, hey, also, by the way, I should mention that because mine was about my sister, Carol, which I totally wish I remember that she had Brew Dudes was her, which is a very good brewing company idea, which is just all of her covers are hot dudes. But it was Brew Dudes. It's that would never happen in you would have to bend over backwards to try to just put random exposition. But
you probably wouldn't even think of it in the middle of improv.
So it just lets you get little.
None of these are improv.
It's
right?
A
you
nice
all came
little
in
like cheat sheet for improv. Yeah. It's you're on stage and then your forearms are covered with Sharpie'd facts.
Yeah. When somebody screams out, hey, give me a word. It's we're giving ourselves a word at the beginning.
Sure.
It's a good warm up in terms of getting into the character and being able to get into the chemistry and the banter and stuff. It does also give you a fun little thing that you can then play around with. And with Birkenstocks, right? That was a dad fact. That then you keep bringing it up in the episode and it became a funny thing. So Beyond the Birth of Rock's Rock, this is a really fun episode, I think. I'm a very big fan of the minivan, Henry blowing the whistle and being all right, let's all talk, because Glenn's not having good boundaries with his son. And then a very classic Matt chaos move. You'd be like, I'm going to unroll the window so you can say all that to Glenn. It's such a good turn to that scene.
Yeah. And Glenn and Nick walking in conjunction with the car, as the car is moving really slowly
then
forward.
And the game of the compliment sandwich. Yes. And then Ron comes in with it's a Big Mac, which means you need to say something mean for another mean thing first. And then you're Henry thinks you're going to get swindled by your son. It's just this episode and the last one, you really see us clue into how to make the dads play off of each other really well. So that was
less antagonistically,
fun.
But still conflict We're working together, but we all have different,
Because you could have gone another way and, like, played your characters as if, oh, well, they're all so optimistic, they'll just trust that Glenn, It's like, no, your characters are judgmental enough in the way that a normal person would be to be like, see that this is going down a way. It's also almost a metagame thing of, like, Anthony's not going to send us to an adventure where everything's fine and the parents are chill with their kids and
Yeah.
Like, I think it makes that episode where generally not a lot happens, from my perspective, a lot juicier, because you all are basically sort of looking into the future and being like, something, there's a turn coming and we know it's coming and we want to, like, at least raise a flag that that is going
to
happen.
I remember specifically thinking as well that I wanted to call it out so that, like, the theme came up in the episode.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh, okay, this is, like, Glenn's problem. Like, and you and one of the best dynamics in the show is the Glenn and Nick dynamic, and the two of you do it so effortlessly. Like, it's such a fun chemistry they have. It's a really nuanced, interesting relationship because they do really like each other, and, like, they are, like, really good friends to each other in a certain way, and there is something really commendable about that, even though you see the way Glenn's failing his son as a dad. But I remember seeing that, and in the moment being like, oh, Henry sidebarring about this is a good way to express this theme and, like, also to do it in a dramatic way that is, like, kind of shit stirring.
That's great.
And what's cool about that is you could easily see how the dynamic between Glenn and Nick would, like, run into or over the dynamic that Henry has with his kids, because they both have this issue of, like, inadequate boundaries and being too pushovers. So the fact that in a show otherwise occupied by these pretty, like, stark sort of archetypes, that, like, you'd have that much overlap and nuance where they still felt like such different types of relationships.
That's interesting. It also brings a different heat to Henry being the one to call it out, because it's like, he has no boundaries and he's looking at Glenn have no boundaries. He's like, but it's working for him.
Yes, yeah. I was just about to say, bullshit. I feel like if Lark and Sparrow thought Henry was cool, Henry would immediately turn into Glenn.
Yeah.
He would immediately be like, yeah, all right, cool, we're all great, have a great dad. Like,
Henry trying to tell other people how to parent is, like, one of the funniest things to me.
I was so excited to get to do that, because it's like, he, like, literally is coming off of his kids trying to fucking mass murder people. He's, like, gonna throw shade at Glenn for being a little too chill with his son. It's like, you asshole.
His son's just hanging out doing some drugs. That's like it.
And also, you get a lot of really good, like, puritanical Daryl freaking out about drugs.
Drugs, yeah.
Stuff, yeah, it's pretty happy. The flower. This is the flower stuff, right?
Yeah.
Were you all the drug flowers?
And so you start picking flowers for Carol. It's also, like, there's the energy of also, like, we all are pretty mad at Nick, because Nick's like, if we find Nick, we're like, cool, let's go save our other sons. And then the client's also like, nah, it's cool, we're gonna hang out here. Like, and, like, I was just reading the transcript, like, I get really angry, like, what the fuck? I was like, I keep calling Nick son. I'm like, get in the car, son. Like, what the, we saved your ass. Like, we got saved. And, like,
call
Henry's
me
like,
son one more time. Yeah.
It's the setup of getting to do scenes where certain characters, you know, like, you, the player, are hearing it, and then you can jump in with the joke of, oh, the other character doesn't know. So this long explanation of, like, oh, these are the drugs, they do drugs stuff, here's all the drug side effects, and then a hard cut to just picking flowers, like, oh, Carol's gonna love these. Where it's like, yeah, that's a joke of, like, oh yeah, he didn't hear.
And then Henry taking a huge whiff of it. Fucking Scam Likely.
Oh yes,
Scam Likely. First appearance of Scam Likely. Listening back, amazing that your immediate reaction was not, okay, we can't piss on the things. A guy named Scam Likely told us it was fine. We definitely can't trust this man.
Well, I guess, again, thank God for that role, right? Yeah. Like, the world really shitty, so it's like Henry Clooney.
Right. I forgot.
Henry falling for it every time. So good.
Did you have Scam Likely in the bag before this started?
Kind of, yeah. I think I've mentioned this before, but the origin of the character Scam Likely was, I was just walking with my friend Rayla one time, and Rayla has this incredibly deadpan delivery of everything she's ever said to me. And so her phone rings and she checks it and she goes, ah, my old friend, Scam Likely, and then puts her phone away. And I laughed for an hour straight. And so I knew that if there was ever a time where I could swing it, where it felt like it made sense for you to get a spam call from an actual god of, like, scamming, that it should just be Scam Likely. And then I did my default voice of, like, funny character, which is like, brilliant. Like, whatever.
Have you talked to your friend?
I have. She's very happy about it. And thankfully has not gotten wise enough to demand merchandising.
Merchandising royalties, et cetera, et cetera.
I'll do one moment I like. I usually don't like things I do, but I did like this, which is Henry does a really good moment where, well, you start freaking out because they're saying your paranoid is from the drugs, and then you start accusing me of poisoning you, and then I say, if I poisoned you, would I do this? And I kiss you on the lips.
That's really good.
And then I instantly throw up, and then I'm like, you poisoned me. And we're all just like losing our minds.
The trajectory of most relationships.
Yeah, the fun of that is, again, we're getting a couple of now beats where it's like, we're starting to explore the dynamic of, like, oh yeah, what are these two dads, like, on their own, right? Off to the side, and you're getting the neurotic energy of Henry and the puritanical energy of Daryl like clashing and getting some of that early on, which is like, ooh, okay, this is fun. We can, you know, we got good little pair off dynamics too.
Yeah, sure. I guess it's the first episode where we start pairing off because you, well, it's later where you actually fully leave, but it's like you and Nick are kind of doing their own thing.
Yeah.
Whereas like
yeah,
even with like when it was Lark and Sparrow, where all the dads were essentially stuck together because mm-hmm. they were like off in the tower. Mm-hmm. Like there's a moment where you get on the elevator with them, but it's not like a big scene where it's yeah, like yeah, you're pretty much with Nick the whole time. It's like Nimby just becomes like the three of us.
And this is the one where we come up with our plan, right?
Oh my God. Like, I laugh so hard whenever I hear the intro that's making fun of Daryl's plan.
Oh, the pee on the, like, the pee on the face is like such
yeah,
a...
Like, it's like, wait, who pees on whose face?
And then when you do the hardcore history, yeah, like, impression of it, and it's like so spot on, it's like, he said exactly, I think that if you, I heard one song.
Yeah, I go year and right. And it's like, if you pee on a cloth, if you pee, right? If you pee on a cloth, you guys are all laughing. I was listening to Hardcore History where they're talking about World War One and they peed on their faces. And then I was like, wait, did one person? Or is it just like, does each man pee on his own yeah, face?
So like, was that you, Beth? Does each guy pee on his own face?
Yeah, there's
like,
a great line later where she says, as Ron, my cloth doesn't smell like it's going to block anything. Do any of you want to trade?
Holy shit, I never caught that. Yeah, that's a really so good line. Oh, shit, man. That's really funny.
I think it's also the first time you reference a podcast, which started off the trend.
Then we do lore like two episodes later.
Yeah, yeah, it's like Daryl definitely listens to Hardcore History.
This one has the Gartok intro, which is one of my favorites.
Yeah, Gartok intro is really fun.
Yeah.
That's true, because yeah, we do Gartok first.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, one of my favorite intro jokes, which is Anthony saying, brought to you by NPR, National Public Radio. Which is
the name of the dragon I'm
standing on as I shout this into the air.
Yeah.
This is probably the first time we do like the long just trying to figure out a plan.
And it's one of the best ones because of just how fucked up and bad the plan gets so yeah, quickly.
How quick did you know it wasn't going to work, Anthony?
Oh, while you were talking about it, I mean, Matt took a while to get through the whole plan. And the second he said P and Mask World War One, I was like, I was immediately Googling it. So
What's
incredible then is that you let us take so much time.
I knew it was going to be that much funnier when it didn't work.
It's just totally poker faced to be like, okay, yeah, like, yeah, yes, you can tie something to the rats. We can figure out a mechanic for that. Like, it's like, yes, yo, okay, so one of them is flying in the window and two are going through
the
door.
You're giving us ropes.
Well, yeah.
I'm pretty sure I think I Discorded you. Or I emailed you saying it doesn't work because I knew that the P, because I was typing.
Oh, so you were doing it too.
Yeah, I was typing because I did remember that was a thing in World War One, and then I typed it up to see if it actually worked, and then it was like, oh, it doesn't. I was like, no, but Daryl doesn't know that.
I remember seeing a message from Matt.
I'm like, this is going to go terribly.
So is that another reason then that Scam likely jumps in when he does? Because I was about to Google it
as
Henry.
Didn't want you to know for sure that it didn't work. Scam likely had to stop you from learning that.
Oh, that's why? Oh,
yeah,
because
I knew it wasn't going to work, but I was like, but Daryl would think it works. Like, yeah, it makes sense for
it. It was
dad.
A delight for me to see my phone vibrate and look at it and see from Matt, it's not going to work.
Your doesn't
and
work.
And I just frowned because I'm like, I know it's not going to work.
It literally never occurred to me that that was the right thing to do. And yeah, I wasn't even interested in Googling it in real life. Like, I was like, no.
It's a perfect Dungeons & Dragons moment, which is like Freddy sneaking up with his nunchucks and Matt sneaking up with his axe. Freddy like does a cool hit, and then Matt rolls a natural one, hits himself in the face with the butt end of the axe, and then falls down into the smoke of the flowers and vomits and starts pirouetting in the air. Like, it is like, it's so funny. It's already a funny punchline, and then you get this second gag of that. Of course, your stupid plan didn't.
That you've been talking about for the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I would love to know what the listener experience of listening to that, because I wonder how many people were like, okay, and then how many people were like, wait, what the fuck are they talking about? Like, right, like how many people we trust Matt/Daryl? Recollection of this podcast episode, and how many are like, this is insane, there's no way.
I think it's also the first and last time. I don't know if it's in the episode, I think you mentioned it, but it's like, it's the first and then very quickly the last time you attempt to give us a map like real Dungeons and Dragons, because Anthony had like the actual dungeon laid out for us, like what their keep was like, and that's why some of the plans convoluted to a degree.
Oh yeah, because
like,
we
actually
got,
have
like
the three entrances and we're like, ooh,
Rainbow
we should
Six
take
over here
like that. And then after that we're like, why did we do this?
Was it on paper?
Yeah, it was on
paper. Yeah. I think this is one of the maps from Lost Mine of Phandelver or something that I
read. Yeah, I remember looking at the paper and being like, I thought that this would make things clearer, but this is also like just, you know, old reliable, the Hat of Vermin. Just like, I really shouldn't have had any other thing with me. Like, for all the stuff I forgot to use, like Hat of Vermin.
This time it's like
rats.
Sonar. Something.
Yeah,
and
the
Dracula.
Rat, the bat was not sonar.
Yeah.
And like Whiskers was the bat or something. It was fucking. Yeah, it was very good. Gag.
I every time fall for Scam Likely's scam, no matter how obvious and dumb it is. Which is why it's funny that it's always Henry that gets called.
It never occurred to me. That's great.
Because yeah, it's that one. Then later at the actual Battle of the Bands, then you just have me on hold for 2 minutes while everyone escapes.
Yeah, I forgot he called Henry
again. And then like later in the right before the body swap episode, like Henry's the one who's like, oh no, we can trust Scam Likely. Yeah, he wants to get his brother back.
Sorry, the names are very good. We named the Bat Nibbler, and the two rats are Sonar and Dracula.
Fuck. We're funny. Shit.
I just want to throw out here at the very end the Easter egg of this one. We were talking about investments, and then I, as a joke, say, if you're young, throw all your money in weed stocks. Who cares?
Would've
just
been a good
an
one.
Update on that. If you had, at the time,
oh God.
At the time of the episode's release, which was April 2019, if you had put it in Tilray, which was a weed stock, you would have lost most of your money. You would have lost 80% of your money.
Oh my God.
Why did weed stocks go down?
They're weed stocks. Like, what are you talking about?
Well, like, weed's like really popular, right?
Do you remember when you guys were trying to get out of the lease at Rocket Jump and those people from that Quantum Weed Company
yeah.
came out?
Yeah. Oh my God. Hold on. What happened to that Quantum?
They were like, we do quantum future stuff to weed. That's what
they
we
liked
do.
Our
we
place
were
like, because like, this big space could work for our refrigerators. We
for
magnetize
our
weed. They didn't actually sell weed. They
sold
something
machines.
To other people's weeds. You
what?
Sent them your weed.
And then,
like,
they put
quantum
it in a centrifuge
dip.
Or something.
Literally, here's a press release from back then. Quanta's new technology. And I was like, I remember just sitting there like,
They
sure.
came with like a shaman or somebody too.
Quanta's
like,
a biotech firm specializing in resonance
energy.
You want
to pay in cash?
Today announced the launch of its patented technology, which uses, ready for this one, quantum physics, to manipulate and stabilize electron spin.
This is money laundering.
To increase performance in the body called polarized cannabis. This is all bullshit.
We were ready to take it because we were ready for anyway to give our lease. We're like, sure, we'll take your cash. And then the landlords were like, we are not letting you move into our place. We're like, come on, they got 6 months cash.
Did you see the shaman?
They got six months cash. They're good for it.
You know, it's a bad time when a company has a shaman on the payroll.
It was a weird time.
God, that's fucking great.
And then they came with just like all kinds of like weed rubs and tinctures and like massage
this
like,
was like
lotions and
right
stuff.
Right before CBD blew up.
Yes.
Like, they were pre-CBD.
No. This was in the thick of all that CBD.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because their point was, CBD is great, but do you want more potent CBD? You could buy our $200,000 medical device.
Do you want multiverse CBD?
Do you want your CBD to be electromagnetized and with your electron spinning well? Then send your weed to us and we'll make your CBD stronger. It's a good business
we'll
model.
We'll put it in the Dragon Ball Z training chamber.
And they had like a investor video that was all stock footage. Like, because all the scientists were like on different machines. Like, this is not your lab. Like, this is all stock footage. It was wild.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Tasid asked a question that Jacqueline then followed up on. So Tasid's initial question is, when did you guys realize that this show was something? Like, when that it was blowing up to some extent? Jacqueline asked, like, was there a moment in the wild where someone mentioned your podcast for the first time and you had like this aha moment of like, hey, maybe we're getting something that counts. I assume it's that car crash video, right?
That was one of the craziest experiences, I think, which was I was on Reddit browsing like idiots in cars or just like looking
man,
at just
I love
fucking
cars.
Content. You know,
yeah,
just fucking
content.
In
just
the
get
content
some
mind.
Content.
Just fucking sucking down content dogs.
I was on my nightly content quest.
You know what I mean? And I stumbled upon bleary eyed into a fucking car crash.
I pondered weak and weary.
Many an ancient content of quaint and curious lore.
And it was like a car crash dash cam compilation, June 2021, craziest car crashes, exclamation point, car crash emoji. And like one of the videos, so this person, like someone pulls in front of them and they does a hard left in front of them and they slam into them. They're listening to our podcast. I thought the podcast had turned on like in the background. I was like, oh, alt tab. Like, wait, what? I backed up on the video. And it was like a person who had crashed their car who had nothing to do with us. It was like Will's voice coming out of their car radio and he got into a car accident. I was like, what are the fucking odds
that in this random car crash compilation video, they're listening to our podcast. I just couldn't believe it. Like, that was maybe more startling to me than almost anything that we have ever done. Any, like, oh, hey, someone was watching your video. Oh, my thumbnail showed up on, like, any of the YouTube stuff. That alone was the most just, like, weird confluence of, like, oh, yes, people listen to podcasts, and sometimes they get into car accidents, and then sometimes those car accidents make it into their dash cam, which then make it into a compilation that I am now watching. It was blew my mind.
I think for me, the moment that I was like, oh, people listen to this show, actually, was, I remember Matt did these little mini figs, like, of the dads. Like, he did his, and Matt had been posting
on
his,
Hero Forge, right?
Yeah, but you had been posting your, like, Warhammer stuff. I don't think you were into Warhammer at that point, but you were posting your mini figs, like, on the minifig forum.
Yeah.
And then you posted, I'm going to paint my Daryl minifig and post it on the Dungeons and Dragons mini forum.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a clever idea. People don't know about the podcast. This might be a good way to get the word out. It's kind of fun. And I was like, no one's going to recognize this character. And it was like the number one post that day. People were like, oh shit. It's
on Reddit, period. Not just that.
Yeah, it made the front page of Reddit.
I think it was Henry's. The Daryl one did well. And then it was Henry's was on... Because it was
yeah.
It's
oh,
also,
you posted it to the Dungeons and Dragons subreddit. I can't remember if it made the front. I think it did make the front page.
Henry's made the front page.
I saw it on the. It was the top post on Dungeons and Dragons. I was like, oh, that's crazy. And then I clicked, and people were like quoting the show and stuff. Yeah. I was like, that's super weird.
Because it was the druid, like Birkenstock wearing like druid dad or whatever.
Oh,
like,
yeah, because you didn't even describe it as Henry. Yeah. You were just like, I'm in a podcast. Page. We have a dad who plays a druid, and people are like, this is Henry Oak.
Art OC. Henry Oak, a nature-loving hippie druid dad.
I literally am part of the Eternity Club on Reddit now because I kind of post on the front page. You can be part of a cool club, which is mostly just other people have been on the front page of occasionally posting pictures of themselves. Like, I made a cake today. It's weird. But that was pretty wild. I remember that being like, that's weird.
So Lauren started listening to the show again. They just stopped for a while because usually they listen to it while they were driving, and then pandemic happened and whatever. So they were listening to it the other night as I went to sleep, and I sleep talk very badly, like constantly.
Oh, you and my brother.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Jimmy like will do full sentences like hard.
Oh yeah, I'll have conversations.
Oh wow.
It's bad.
You guys have
apparently
the same,
when
right?
I'm asleep, I could hear her, like apparently my subconscious heard her laughing at certain jokes. And I in my sleep would be like, fuck off, it's not that fucking funny. Show's not that good.
You said that in your sleep?
In my sleep, I'm like, show's not that good. And then she was like, and told me about it the next day. She's like, well, did you not like that I was listening? I don't know what you're talking about. I have no memory of what you're talking about. So that was when it was real for me. 2 days Jesus. Ago.
2 days ago, you're like, oh, this shows I still hate my own shit.
Yep, still hate my shit.
There have only been a couple of times where it was like kind of all at once or whatever, but I think it definitely felt gradual. Oh, I was at a party when it first came out, or like a couple of months after it started taking off, and there was like some stranger there who was like talking about it, and I was like, I'm on it. And they're like, that's cool, leave me alone. And then a lot of people that I went to like high school with or like college with would like hit me up out of the blue and be like, oh, I'm listening to this.
Yeah,
to this day, like having done a fair share of, you know, rando stuff online, et cetera, and having been in meetings where people are like, oh, we loved your YouTube video stuff. And it's like, right, you've seen a couple that your interns have sent to you and stuff. It still blows my mind whenever we run into someone who like either can like quotes a thing from a show or references something that's like beyond the first four episodes. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh, you actually listened to it. Like, it's still like, especially in Hollywood, you're so used to people just like being
I
like,
love your work. You don't know.
I think my
anything.
Favorite example of this is like how many times we've gotten to rooms of Video Game High School, people being like, we love Video Game High School, and they talk about something and you're just like, that was a plot point in the third season. And they're talking about like, we didn't do that. So it tells us they just watched a little bit of it. And that's it. You know, so they're just blowing smoke up our ass. So you're so used to that. So then anytime someone's like, oh my gosh, I'm at this part, and like on episode blah, 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 and you're like, whoa, that's more than a single digit. That's wow. Oh, wow. You know, it's just always a joy.
When I heard that Will got recognized from his voice, like that's like also when it became real for me.
That was when it became real for me too. That was very.
Yeah.
So this is our last Talking Dad record of season one.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
I didn't think about that.
You mean we're not going to do one for Entourage?
No.
Entourage.
We should do Talking Dads for each of the Talking Dads.
So I figure we should end on what we often do in the show, which is something completely unrelated to the show at all. So we were talking about West Side Story, talking about Steven Spielberg. What's everyone's favorite Steven Spielberg film and why?
Ooh.
That's a tough one.
I can go first.
Okay. Yeah, you go first.
No, you go first.
For mine, despite the fact that like as old as I get, you know how like when you're a kid, you see things that don't make sense and you're like, well, when I get older, I'm sure that'll make sense because the world has to have some sort of order to it and things have to make sense. Like, I, as a kid, was like, well, the ending of Raiders of the Lost Ark doesn't make any sense, but I'm sure when I grow up, it'll make more sense to me. And as I've gotten older, it still kind of doesn't. Like, it's still wild to me that the climax of that movie is just like, like, that's still the absolutely bizarre, but that's probably still my favorite movie of his by far.
I mean, it's a good ass movie.
It's an incredible adventure movie with no foreshadowing to its climax whatsoever.
Jurassic Park is one of my favorite movies, if not my favorite movie of all time. It's definitely in like the rotating top five of my favorite movies. And I just love it. It's got everything. It's got cool action and then like pathos like no other. I think that the flea circus scene with Laura Dern and Richard Attenborough is incredible and poignant. And I think that like I am blown away with it every time I watch it. And then, you know, came out the same year as Schindler's List, which I think is his other like.
It did?
Yeah, dude.
Whoa, isn't that insane? What a year.
I mean, Spielberg is so fucking good that he was rushing through Jurassic Park to get to Schindler's.
That was him fucking like rushing through.
Yeah, that's why there's like that's why there's the whole mistake with the when the bus, like the Jeep, when it goes over the cliff. There's no canyon there. There's a whole sequence and they were just like, oh, we don't have time for it or whatever. And it's like, okay, it doesn't matter.
Same thing with Catch Me If You Can in Munich. He was like literally they're saying he would run down, do a shot, Catch Me If You Can, and then run over and then start working on Munich. Like, yeah, ridiculous.
I think my favorite might honestly be Empire of the Sun.
Oh, wow.
I have the same answer.
Well, oh, really? Well, there you go.
Really?
Yeah. Christian Bale is fucking incredible in it. It is every bit, I think, as a war movie, every bit as good as Saving Private Ryan. I think it's better. It's heartbreaking. People got on him because, like, when it came out, they were like, he's being so nostalgic about this POW camp. And it's like, it's from a fucking kid's perspective. Yeah. He has no idea what's going on. Like, it's, of course, it feels that way. Like, the scene where at the climax of the film, the Allies are bombing and he's screaming at the P-38s as they fly in.
Yeah.
And then, like, when he's trying to bring his friend back to life, like, it's just fucking. Oh, what a movie. And I think maybe my favorite John Williams soundtrack as well. Like the main
that's an incredible,
just jaw-dropping. And it breaks my heart that like he doesn't like it.
Really?
The critics didn't like it.
Empire of the Sun's probably my personal favorite. I mean, Spielberg's maybe, I go back and forth between Kurosawa and Spielberg. Spielberg's probably my favorite director of all time. And I think he's probably the best living director, if not best director ever. Other than BFG and Always, like all of his movies have something that are worth like, even 1941 has this incredible USO sequence.
It's fucking Ready Player One. That
Ready
movie
Player
rips
One, baby.
Ass.
Video games,
so fucking
baby.
Fun.
Ready Player One has problems. Ready Player One is still, other than the Avengers, is better than every single Marvel movie. Ready Player One's a fucking blast. I love Ready Player One. It's all right. But he has a lot of masterpieces. Like like my favorites. Like I love Jurassic Park. I love Jaws. I love E.T. I love Lincoln. He just has
Raiders, baby. Come on.
I love Raiders. Yeah. I mean, I fucking love Temple of Doom.
Temple of Doom's great.
Yeah, it's I love it. But Empire of the Sun is very much in the realm of like Lord of the Rings and Gladiator in terms of like being very foundational. Even though I think he was one of the greatest filmmakers of all time, like he's a very literal filmmaker. Like he knows exactly what he wants you to think. And then he fucking knows how to do it better than anybody who's ever fucking done film. He's like, I want you to feel this way. And that's how I'm going to make you feel. And Empire of the Sun, weirdly enough, is like more than like any French New Wave movie. Cause I watched Empire of the Sun first, like made me realize that you can like portray a scene in one way while literally trying to make it say the exact opposite. Like it can be romantic. You can like make it like subjective and weird. And like from a kid's point of view, while literally doing the exact opposite. And there's an interesting alt history where like, if the critics loved Empire of the Sun, Spielberg may have done more of that stuff, but he did. He took it as a perfectionist, as somebody who's very, you know, probably ego driven. Like the critics did not like it and he fucking was like, I'll never do a movie like that again. And frankly, probably up until like Munich sex scene, like almost other
which
time
he also got ridiculed on
he never does kind of like subjective, like weird, like subversive stuff anymore.
What happened to that? I forgot the Munich
there's
sex
just there's scene at the end of the movie is he's after he's gone through this whole horrible mission of revenge, Eric Bana's character's having sex with his wife and he's having flashbacks to like all the fucking people,
but
he
the
killed.
Sex scene is shot like erotic very sweaty. It's like a very, it's like not what you expect.
Like, it's they're fucking like it's like
they're
intense.
Fucking
and then he has this like traumatic flashback right as he orgasms, basically.
Yeah, to be fair, like when I saw people laughed in the theater,
it is so intense that it's one of those things you get uncomfortable and you laugh.
Yeah.
But it's him going for something that I think the audience frankly wasn't ready for.
And I would argue he does that in Schindler's List too.
I think so.
Again, Schindler's List is a masterpiece. Empire of the Sun is just, it's fucking heartbreaking. I fucking like cry every time I watch it. It's got this incredible music.
That,
it's
the
just
end
gorgeous.
Just fucking guts me.
Yeah. It's just, it's simple. It's just, he doesn't recognize his own parents. It's just fucking, The movie's incredible.
I also love the cleanliness of the, like, hey, do you want a Hershey bar as a character arc thing of, like, somebody says it to me, then I say it to somebody else at the end of the movie, like, ah. Like,
it's Ben Stiller in the one-line role. Yeah.
It is shocking to read the reviews of Empire of the Sun, because it is, like, you realize that critics as a whole do get vendettas, especially back then, because it's like, how fucking thick could you be to be like, Spielberg treated this like E.T.? It's like literally to the point where it's like almost so over the top, because Spielberg's so good at clear. It's like he is literally shaking his friend and his friend starts bleeding from the mouth. It's like his reality is broken. It's like, obviously, like, it's romantic because it's from the kid's point of view. Like, come on, critics, like, just give him no benefit of the doubt.
I can't even intelligently speak on Spielberg because there's so much else going on there that I have no concept of. But the way that Spielberg films and tells stories about kids, I think, is like unparalleled in the idea of treating them with their own agency and knowing enough, like, intuitively as adults, but also to have this complete lack of, like, reality about the things that they're realizing is, like, so cool and just, like, I think exceptional. And you see stuff like that in E.T. where these, like, these phone conversations are shot from, like, torso level where you do not know what your mom's saying on your phone or on the phone or whatever. It's just, like, so incredible.
I mean, even Jurassic Park, like, it's from Sam Neill's POV, but, like, some of the best stuff is when it switches to, like, the kids' perspective. And
kitchen scene of the night. Yeah. You guys have seen the audition video of the kid who plays Elliot.
Putting
it in the bleachers, and then to the point where Spielberg, who's probably seen 1,000 people audition for the role, just goes, "Okay, kid, you got the job."
You got the job.
What
about anyway,
you,
the BFG has got to be named after the gun in Doom.
Mark Rylance fucking up a caco demon.
That was the funniest thing I'd ever seen in fourth grade when Doom came out. And then the I knew the big fucking gun first. And then everyone was like, we're going to be reading the BFG by Roald Dahl.
I think I got to go with, like, Raiders, man. Like, there's just so much. I mean, there's a great, Soderbergh does a great exercise with Raiders where he puts just, like, ambient music under it, removes all the dialogue, removes all the color from it. And then just, you're like, hey, just watch this. Just watch this and see what you learn from it. And it's like, I think it's a required exercise for anybody who cares about movies, because you realize when you strip away color, sound, music, dialogue, how much gets across just from blocking, camera position, camera choice, lens choice, camera movement. Like, it's incredible.
On a purely technical level, there's almost nobody, like, almost even, like, people, you know, like Terry Gilliam, even he would have to admit, like, there are two things I think Spielberg is better at than almost anybody who's ever lived in filmmaking, which is just straight technical blocking, just watching how he makes characters move around a scene and the camera follows them. It's like Godard level weird shit, but then not, like, in it your is, face. Like, Godard will have characters walking in and out of a frame, be like, oh, that's artistic and weird. Whereas Spielberg's stuff is as weird and technical, but then it's so elegant and flowing.
It is
and
so other, insanely complex, but he makes it look effortless.
And then crowds,
insane.
Nobody in history has ever handled crowd scenes better than him. And Raiders of the Lost Ark is a perfect example of the entire basket scene. Like, that's like Schindler's, like, so, like, Saving Private Ryan, like, all this, like, West Side Story. Like, you direct one thing, you realize how hard it is to handle more than, like, two people in a frame.
Yeah.
And he just, like, it feels like he's not even trying. Like, he just can put thousands of people in a frame and then just still concentrate on single stuff. It's,
he also does, I think, the best, like, wake up, school's in 5 minutes scenes in a home, like, ever. Like, houses should be chaotic because that's what being young is your mom's trying to do X, Y, and Z, get you out the door, all this kind of stuff's happening. Every time I see a, like, hey, wake up in 5 minutes scene from now on, I'm just like, oh, you're trying to do what Spielberg did in, like, Close Encounters, and it's, you're not doing it
quite
as well.
You're trying to do what the auteurs of that Pop-Tarts commercial did. Where they sold the entire relationship between this mom and her son when she, like, tosses him
what
the
Pop-Tarts. What a great commercial.
And the, no, Toaster Strudels. That's what it is.
Yeah, Toaster Strudels, because he opens up the locker.
Yeah, he gets the Pop-Tarts from mom, and you're like, well, this is a discordant family. Like, you know, like, they seem like they're in sync, but maybe they're not. And then, he gets
totally
the Toaster Strudel from his friend. And then one of the most heartbreaking twists in cinema is that this kid is a compulsive hoarder
who's stuffed his
entire locker full of Pop-Tarts.
It really is a modern Bicycle Thieves, because it ends.
Oh my God.
It ends with the mom trying to balance her checkbook. She's like, if only I wasn't paying for all these Pop-Tarts.
I was losing my shirt on these cherry Pop-Tarts.
But I do it for my son, whom I love.
And he loves them. It's like, oh, if only you two would talk. What a great commercial. God, I love Spielberg.
I'll say one more thing about Spielberg, and then I guess we'll
stop. You can take us out.
Yeah. One of the most, I don't know, just cool things about his movies are that they are, at the same time, extremely patient and then extremely propulsive, where it's like, you think about the first act of these movies, take their time. Like, they're just like, you know, you've got a whole bunch of fucking setup and stuff like that. But, you know, regardless of that, each scene feels like inextricable from the final product. Each scene is like going so fast into the next one and feels like just such a necessary step into everything that you're setting up and realizing. So I just like, I mean, that's incredible.
One of my favorite things about Jurassic Park is like the franchise went on to be like very monster palooza, like, you know, like, oh, there's the T-Rex. Oh, watch out, blah, blah, blah. But like, the first was a very thoughtful movie. And like, again, like there's a lot of conversations. Like I remember for a movie that is clearly for kids, like it's a lot of grownups talking about shit you don't understand at all.
Yeah.
But then it's still engaging. It's still interesting. But it's like the scene I always think of the most that like you could never imagine another Jurassic Park movie doing is like after the velociraptors eat the cow and then it just cuts to them all like, we're going to have a lunch and talk about the themes of the movie
so far. Ethics of the
and
movie.
It's like, you're like, well, you know, like, I don't know if we should be doing this. Like you're selling it, John. Like you don't have the, you don't have the discipline to do this.
The one who's backing me up is the blood-sucking lawyer.
It's a fucking very grown-up scene. Yeah. And it's like, could you imagine like Chris Pratt like being like, well, I just don't know if I agree with the ethical ramifications of this.
No,
like,
yeah. There's not really any wisecracks in that movie. It's just a bunch of intelligent characters.
Yeah. It's so, anyway.
As we've talked about many times, it's got some fucking sexuality in it. Yes. Fucking John
Rudd Dern in the end of the movie when she's all dirty.
And her and Goldblum, like Goldblum in there. Goldblum like,
is like, literally every single shot.
He steps in and he's like, let me pour water in your hand. Even as a kid, you're like, whoa, this is sex.
Yeah, even literally, even when he's the way he cocks his hip out when he goes, that is a big pile of shit.
Oh my god! Yeah. Like, holy shit! Yeah, and then Sam Neill. Yeah, it's like also like Sam Neill, Laura Dern had such a weird like platonic relationship in that movie where I didn't even realize that they were together until I was like 10. Like the first like few times I saw it, I was like, I thought that they were just like
Dr. Sadler. Is she like available? I'm always on the lookout for the next ex Mrs.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So good. Okay, I'm gonna take us out with like a funny story from getting my blood drawn yesterday, which has like, so basically, I don't know why this was so funny to me and I couldn't react in the doctor's office at all, but like, you know, it was kind of cold in LA yesterday. like, I don't know. It's supposed to be colder than Boston and New York right now. Who cares? We should go fuck ourselves. Anyways, as like this nurse was drawing my blood, she like held onto the vials after I had like given the blood or whatever. And she's like, oh, so warm. I love it. I just love holding on to them. And I'm like,
what a wild thing to say.
I know. I was so like losing warm. My goddamn mind because I'm like, well, like, you'll give them to the lab, right?
No. Yo. She's going to use your blood to fill in the holes and complete the code. Bingo. Bethany DNA.